Welcome everyone to this week's Certainly Not in Crisis Total Rugby League show, and joining me here round the table this week at League Express HQ, no injuries here, it's a full squad this week, is Matthew Shaw, Marty Sadler, joining us once again, Mr. Aaron Bauer. So hello everybody and welcome to this week's show, a preview for the Challenge Cup coming up shortly. We'll also be discussing the Women's Super League and that big clash this weekend between St Helens and Castleford, as we'll be joined by Tigers head coach Lindsay Anfield. Before all of that, so one place we can start this week. Who wants to go first? Leeds Rhinos. You surprised at the timing, Matthew? I'll come to you first.
I am, because it's Leeds. I think when you think of Leeds, you think stability, you think longevity, you just think stable.
Strong and stable, as Theresa May said before the 2017 general election.
And look how that worked out.
Yes, well, very true. But So for me, it's very un-Leeds-like, but that said, well, I was going to say the performances and the results have been very un-Leeds-like, but they've only been the same as what they've been in two of the last three seasons, so it's not really. And here they are, looking for another new head coach. I think Richard Agar will be the sixth person to take charge of a first-team game in the last 12 months. If I'm not wrong.
Well, he's certainly looking for a third permanent head coach in less than a year, which is just not good at all.
It's not good for anyone, and it's just not Leeds. It's just not Leeds. It's just not the Leeds way. There are problems at Leeds. We all know that. We're all very well aware of that. I would suggest this probably tells us that the issues are far deeper than we thought. If I'm honest, well, I think generally I thought that this was a squad matter. The players just weren't good enough to play for Leeds. I think they suggest more, because if it was that, Dave Ferner would have been given the time to recruit his own players.
Well, the implication is he's not been coaching them well enough, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the suggestion.
That's the conclusion you've got to draw, and you've got to assume that they think that Richard Agar, at least in the short term, will do a better job. I mean, obviously, the news coming out of Australia suggests that Ferner is going to sue Leeds for wrongful dismissal. I'm not quite sure what the grounds for that would be. But, you know, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem for them. Bad publicity. And you've got to say, is 14 games enough to make a judgment on a coach in this sort of way? I'm not sure it is. It's a transitional season for Leeds. Yeah. It was always going to be a transitional season. I think they've given him a three-year deal, haven't they, Ferner? And, you know, when you give somebody a three-year deal, you've got to be aware that the first year might be tough going.
I think the question as well, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were on back chat with Gary Everington, but the question was asked of him, who recruited the players, the overseas players? And I'm pretty sure he said that they were recruited before Dave Ferner had come in.
I think what he said was that they consulted Dave Ferner, and Dave Ferner gave his approval to all of them.
Right.
I think that was what the response was. And, you know, the overseas players have not been a tremendous success at Leeds this year, have they?
They've not been
a massive failure.
I think Hurrell's been very good, and I think Merrin's been decent as well.
Lollahea obviously hasn't.
Aaron, if it is a transitional season, and they're going to get a new head coach in at some point, does that mean there's going to be another transitional season next season, or do they think the building blocks are there, it just needs the right guy as head coach?
Well, it's only last week we were talking about Huddersfield, saying that they're desperate for someone to stay for longer than 18 months to break this habit of sacking coaches, then rebuilding a squad, and then deciding to get rid, and then sacking a coach again. I think it's a staggering decision from Leeds. It's a brave one. None of us know the full story. None of us know what's happening behind the scenes. So if you're a Leeds fan, you've got to trust the club's judgment. Gary Etherington's certainly got a decent enough record in making judgment calls.
It looks as though it was Kevin Sinfield's decision, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the point.
Kevin Sinfield's
And he's still got quite a lot to prove in that role.
Yeah, lots
of honest
the
about it.
The pressure's on there, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I do. Yeah, just a cautionary tale in the sense of I spot a football team who've had six managers in nearly 2 years and they've just been relegated. You know, it doesn't help.
No.
You've got to trust someone. You've got to trust someone to deliver what you're trying to achieve. I think anyone thinking Leeds are going to spring straight back into another golden generation after losing four or five of the best players ever to wear the shirt, pretty deluded. I don't think there are many that think that. But I think Ferner was worthy of some time. And the statement, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into the statement, but I thought it was interesting that it started with the club saying, we need to go in a fresh direction. We're conscious that results aren't good enough and we need to go in another direction. And then at the end saying, actually, Richard Agar's got a lot of experience. We're not in any rush to make an appointment. So are you desperate to go in another direction? Or are you in no rush? You know, that said to me, there's something deeper there.
You've got to say, what direction could they go in? Because they've got an established squad of players now. They're not going to be able to bring anybody in.
Let's go for short notice. I mean, obviously, everyone goes into hyperdrive at this point, starts naming players and ex-players and head coaches and that kind of thing. Richard Marshall is the favourite at the moment.
I don't think he'll get the job.
Well,
I think I'd love to do with the fact he was in the
stands recently.
Probably. I think what you fight generally, I think in rugby league, you can get very good odds on people that, and the people at short odds don't tend to get jobs. I think
Richard Marshall looks to me like a Super League assistant.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Richard Marshall will be on the coaching staff at Leeds before the end of the year. But I don't think he'll be the head coach.
But that job and that group of players, there's a lot of big characters, a lot of big names in there. With no disrespect to Richard Marshall, who's been arguably the best coach outside Super League for 5 years, that job is probably just too big for him at this moment in time.
Well, put it this way. You did a piece in The Guardian saying Sean Wayne was interested. If you line up Richard Marshall and Sean Wayne next to each other,
yeah,
and you ask the fans, right, which one do you want? Which are they going to go for on the majority?
He's Matt's just segued into Wayne.
Let's segue into your Guardian.
Well, so no.
What do you know?
Wayne, he's not necessarily walking over broken coals to get the job. I stress that. He's very happy in rugby union. He's very happy doing what he's doing. However, if Leeds gave him a call and said, would you be interested in coming down to Headingley and having a chat, he would definitely be open to doing so.
And Leeds would be crazy not to give him that call.
I think he's... I think for what they're trying to achieve and where they want to go in the short and the medium term, I don't really see anyone better than Sean Wayne, who's going to go in, tighten the defence up, crack a few skulls, blood a few kids, move some people on who don't want to be there. Mm. My only issue is, and again, I say this without knowing the full facts, but there's obviously... Kevin Sinfield's obviously got some input, at least some serious involvement. Would Sean Wayne be willing to work so closely with someone who has also got his hands on the on-field side of things and the recruitment side of things? Sean Wayne strikes me as a man who does things his own way. He's the coach. Nobody else messes with the team. And if Kevin Sinfield is helping to recruit or things like that, that might be...
There were rumours, weren't there, about Wayne when he left Wigan that he didn't like the fact that they'd recruited Hardy.
Yeah.
And there is a history there of some tension.
At the same time, I don't get the impression that Kevin Sinfield is a man who's desperate for power or control.
No. But that's the setup though,
and that's.
But what is it the case? Is it like at other clubs where the coach says, right, go and recruit me that player, and then Kev goes and recruits that player, or is it a case of
Kev tells says the coach,
him, this is who I think we should recruit. Mm. This is what we're going to do.
That's where Wayne would be a little bit.
I honestly think that Kevin Sinfield wouldn't be desperate to have that sort of power and influence.
Well, I'm not at all sure about that. The fact is that Leeds, you know, prior to this season, hadn't entered the marquee player market. This year, they've got two marquee players, you know, under
and
Kevin.
And Lollier is
you know, Gary Hetherington handed the sort of rugby managerial and recruitment role to Kevin Sinfield. And Kevin has gone out and, you know, all credit to him, he's gone out and done that. And he's changed the policy at Leeds. He's got two marquee players in that they didn't have before. So that's very much down to him, I think. So, you know, he's a very proactive guy in that role. And, you know, no doubt he will continue to.
Wayne, feel free to correct me, Wayne's a standout candidate. There's nobody with a better CV and a better skill set to go in and give Leeds what they need than Sean Wayne, in my opinion.
I agree with that. I don't think there's a better coach. I think there are other good coaches out there.
They're all under contract. For my opinion,
they could get some of them out.
Daryl Powell.
I was going to cut to Daryl.
Well, he's already said no. I suspect Chris Chester will do the same.
It would be interesting if Leeds went out and approached Castleford or approached Wakefield. Or, and I'd like to throw his name in, Ian Watson. If they approached those three clubs and said, name your price. Yeah. How would that test the
I think Daryl Powell, it's quite interesting that he said he's not interested because How many years has he been at Castleford now?
Six years. Yeah.
You see, I think that a coach has a shelf life.
Yeah.
And if I were Darryl, I'd be a bit real. I don't think I'd dismiss it so readily. There's always that danger that you outstay your welcome at a club.
I agree, but I get the feeling Darryl's probably desperate not to leave Castleford without winning a major trophy.
Yeah, well, that's great.
The other thing, you look at Leeds right now. You look at where they are. Is this going to be turned around in 12 months?
No.
Not for me. You look at where Castleford had injuries in the seventh or whatever, and it's not going fantastically well, but there are reasons for that. Is moving to Leeds, you answer the question for me, is moving to Leeds a better job than being the Castleford
coach? Not right now. And that's again why
it depends how you define it.
That's why I think people are being disrespectful to clubs like Wakefield in immediately saying, "Oh, Chester's got to be ready for a step up." Well, who's more likely to win a trophy this year?
The other side of the argument you made about shelf life and head coaches is, you know, if you're the head coach of Wakefield or Castleford at the minute, it's a nice job.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your squad you want.
Popular.
They're well-run clubs. You're popular with the fans.
I always tend to say, though, with coaching, all you need is three successive defeats and you're in a crisis.
It's a fair point what Martin makes, because, look, you would never say that, Darryl Powell's time might be, his shelf life might be coming up, because what makes you think that? But history tells you that coaches do have a shelf life. Mm. It happens everywhere. Tony Smith was a prime example. Most recently, Richard Marshall at Halifax has been.
Tony Smith at both Leeds and Warrington.
Yeah, Warrington. You suspect it's between Shane Flanagan and Sean Wayne, don't you?
How many coaches have been at a club for more than 7 years in
McDermott, who won everything there was to win. He got the P45 through the letterbox eventually, didn't he?
Interesting point. Was that now a mistake?
I thought it was a mistake at the time.
Hindsight's brilliant, isn't it?
I don't know.
Getting back.
But you've got to bear in mind that two years ago, in 2017, Leeds were in a very tricky position early in the season. And they came through to win the grand final, didn't they? So, you know, you can improve. Just as I say, three defeats in a row and you're in crisis. Three wins in a row and you're going up.
We've mentioned loads of names, and there's a guy currently in a live job interview who's going to be in the dugout on Saturday, Richard Agar. He could have the job for a week, a month, six months, 3 years. His job now is to put Leeds in a difficult position, because if he goes and wins his next four games,
you've got to say with Richard Agar, there are a few coaches in rugby league with wider experience.
And there's always this mystique.
He's been everywhere.
There's always this mystique surrounding Agar. He's got some sort of cult status as a woeful coach. But if you speak to any player who's worked under him, they would all, or most of them would say, brilliant man manager, brilliant tactician, brilliant coach. Yeah. He's very well thought of in the game. And look, you don't work for Warrington, St George and Leeds in the space of the last 2 and a bit years if you're a poor coach.
The thing with Agar, now Kev Sinfield did some interviews yesterday and he said that Agar came across with absolutely no desire and no intention of coaching. Does he want the job? Does he want the job right now?
I'd be giving the interim gig then.
Yeah, I mean,
because they need someone to do it in the short term. Yeah. He might
grow into it. You never know.
Yeah. Time will tell.
But we've dedicated a good chunk there of the show to the Leeds Rhinos, and we're coming back to Leeds shortly because we've got a Challenge Cup preview and we're discussing that Bradford match as well this weekend. But we record this show on Wednesday lunchtime. If there is any announcements from Headingley, totalrl.com, the place to go to. Just before we move on to the Challenge Cup and league and on the pitch stuff, there was an interesting piece in League Express this week about the injury crisis, which is affecting a number of clubs in Super League, and a list at time of print. Castleford with 11 injuries, Catalans with 8, Huddersfield with 7, Hull 15. Well done, Aaron, for this research.
Yes,
by the way.
It was an excellent article.
Hull KR 10, Leeds with 7, Wakefield 10, Wigan with 7, Salford with just 1, which I think goes to show you if that's all you've got and you've got to keep hold of it.
But it's also why, for me, the concerns about Salford, without getting too deep into each club, why there are concerns over Salford, that they're doing very well at the minute to only have one injury. If they get anywhere near what some other clubs are suffering with, they're in trouble.
Cotton wool. Everywhere you look.
If they had 6 injuries, they would be in trouble.
Yeah. Irrespective of who they were.
Yeah.
But it looks like Super League are going to act on this because interesting what you said about over half of those injuries come from over the Easter period.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, including the third game after, you know, the first game after the double header to sort of stretch the facts and boost the story a little bit. But yeah, about 40 of those injuries came in that 10-day period between Easter Thursday and the Sunday afterwards.
Do you know how many out of interest were in from Easter Monday and then the weekend?
No, I didn't look that far because enough. I think I am a journalist. But yeah, they're going to change it. It's got to change now that, you know, the numbers speak for themselves.
Well, they detract from the game, don't they?
Yeah,
that's the point.
Yeah.
When there are so many injuries, you know, you've got clubs playing badly and getting some strange.
Well, not just that, the games since the Easter period have been a bit.
Yeah. The thing is, if you believe what people say, it's a financial reason why they want to keep Easter. But I don't see.
But the crowds are never that good on Easter Monday.
That doesn't add up for me.
I'm led to believe there are a couple of chief executives now who had previously been all about the money over Easter that are now thinking this probably isn't worth it to lose players for 6 or 7 weeks.
Does it save them? Do they actually generate money? Because you get the injuries. The facts are there. We've done this. We did this 2 or 3 years ago, and it was exactly the same. They pick up injuries over Easter. The insurance that costs, the operations it costs, then the detraction in your results, and then the crowds go down. Does it actually, in the long term, save you any money?
And there's also a case, and there's one game in particular can argue this for. I don't care how big a rugby league fan you are, three games in 9 days is just too much, and then all the other games on the telly as well. And the prime example, look at the crowd at Castleford on Friday night.
That was
scary. 5,300.
For Warrington, the second in the league.
That's about 3,000 down on what they'd normally get.
But again, coming back to the point I made, they've been losing games. They've picked up more injuries over Easter.
Yeah.
People probably didn't expect them to win, so they didn't turn up.
So why should we
actually,
go?
And those, having that and game those, over Easter is not saving them money.
And I know we're all for, you know, trying to create a spectacle and, you know, say to Sky, look at these games here. Mm. Good Friday matches are all a distant memory now, aren't they?
Yeah. It's like, if you would have had, I'm firmly of the opinion now that you get rid of the double header and you play 6 games over the weekend. Castwakey Thursday night, Old Derby Friday, Wigan Saints Saturday. Couple of non-event games involving Catalans and stuff on Sunday, and then like a Leeds Warrington on Easter Monday. Spread it over the weekend,
and that'd be a great weekend.
Phenomenal, and like Ben says, they'd be firmly in the memory. You know, Good Friday was what Saints did on Good Friday was phenomenal, and the whole performance was just gone.
Without trying to play devil's advocate here too much, though, we're already starting the season in January, so where are we?
We've got to play fewer games.
And how do we do that?
Well, by playing fewer games.
Yeah. By putting Super League up to 14 teams and making it a 27-game season.
Well, this is what I think they should do.
13-0, 13-away magic.
That's what I think they should do.
You're going to have Catalans v Toulouse then over the Easter.
Well, if they're one of the two that get in, obviously.
But there's a few points to that. It's not going to happen next year. That's not going to happen next year.
We're stuck for this.
And then we're going on to another league restructure.
Okie dokie. Right.
I agree though.
Well, it's Challenge Cup this weekend for a good proportion of Super League sides, but let's touch upon some of those big results from round 14 last week. Saints beat Hull KR, but we do have to mention Hull KR gave it a good dig, didn't
they? Better than we thought they would have done. Yeah, absolutely. Fair play to them.
If you're part of the coaching staff or the hierarchy at Hull KR, what can you get out of that result there and that performance?
Oh, probably a belief that, look, while we're losing games and we're only winning here and there, we're going to be good enough over 29 weeks to stave off London and survive.
I agree that they'll stave off London. I don't think they can take much from it at all, because when they're playing the teams lower down the league,
that's what I mean.
Well, yeah, but to go.
That's
the second time they've
Yeah, but Martin, they won at Wakefield about 10 weeks ago now.
Was it Saints again who they really ran close?
They did it.
They ran Saints close twice, but in between all that, they were being absolutely pummeled by Leeds before Leeds, well, whichever way you look at it, they still lost the game. They've lost other games in between that time too. So for me, it's all right competing against the top teams and just coming up short, but they're still losing games. And when they play the lesser teams, they don't maintain that level of standard.
This is just to, you know, loosely tie it in, Hull KR and Leeds, but we're talking about Leeds and stability. If there was ever a year to give a coach a year and let him just have free rein and get them where he wanted to get them to, it was this year, wasn't it? They were never going to go down. I still believe. I don't care
They're going to be
too good for London. They're going to win enough games. There's enough quality in that squad. So, Ferner, Ferner was worthy of this season, surely. But anyway,
what would you have been saying if London had have beat Wigan on Thursday and
Leeds? They didn't.
I'd still say London would go down over 29.
But
weeks.
You could understand why Kev Sinfield and Gary Everton would be panicking at that point.
I don't. Would you
joint bottom after 14 rounds?
Well, they're not joint bottom, are they?
If London had have beat Wigan,
you know, go down.
Yeah, but
no, I agree, but you can understand. You can't Matthews, just rule it out.
It's okay. I've got it in my head.
The two points.
I'm doing an audio cut of that. I'm shoving it on my desktop for October. Don't worry. Right,
they won't go down. I'm just making the point. You can understand why the decision makers are concerned about where they are in the league.
But Saints continue their run up at the top. Warrington keep the gap to four though with a good win over Cass on Friday. Cass injury ridden. Yeah. There's not much else we can say really. Wakefield up to third though. Following yet another tight game over Huddersfield.
Be the Wakefield
one point.
Can't win close games.
I never said they can't.
No, they obviously read your article, didn't they?
Martin.
You know.
Right, let's just
provocative tweets.
It wasn't a provocative tweet.
Yeah.
Piers
Morgan.
I never said they can't win close games. I said they don't win enough close games. If they started winning the close games, they'd be serious contenders. Lo and behold, they've won two close games since and they're up to third. I rest my case.
Up to fourth, also keen listeners of the show, Catalan. And Hull dropped to fifth. Staying in a hotel.
Well,
I think clearly
I'm fully prepared to eat humble pie because it's easier to get stuck into the rhetoric that Catalans can't win in England. But I mean, look, I know Hull had about 100 players out injured, but they 37-6 at the K-Com. It's a great result, and it does show that
15.
You what? Sorry, 15. Yeah,
it does
show that
should know that, that really.
Steve McNamara is. He's making some strides in Perpignan.
Not to exaggerate.
No. He's making some strides in Perpignan, Steve McNamara. I'm still reserved over whether they'll make the five. Of the five that are in there now, I think Castleford will replace Catalans. But, look...
Not too sure about that.
They keep winning in England. They've got every chance.
Funny
team, aren't they?
I don't think you can read too much into it. You have 15 players, how are you going to get beat?
How do you read in a Hull? What you can read into Hull
is the fact that they have too many injuries, which is a...
I mean, just Catalans would say they've got injuries too.
Yeah, they have, but they haven't got as many as Hull. And
they've got nearly a team
The thing with Hull, what Hull need to figure out, because this has been going on for two now,
yeah,
too long now,
these injuries,
they need to figure out why they are getting so many injuries.
Yeah.
Because that is... Are they not recruiting durable players? Is it come down to that? What they have to do is figure out why they are getting so many injuries. Because if they can keep a fully fit squad, they had pretty much full strength team out against Hull KR.
Yeah, and blew them. And I saw Ian Blee's tweet at the weekend, you know, saying credit to our SNC staff. Greg Brown, I think, is the head of SNC, isn't he? He was saying...
Very highly regarded.
Does a brilliant, brilliant job. And I know for a fact that you know, St Helens have gone a good period of time under Holbrook without any bad injuries. I know they've got two or three now.
Yeah.
But the club's looking at Saints, saying, what are they doing that we're not doing, and trying to work out how...
I mean, in the NRL, for example, and the number of injuries there is incredibly less than it is in Super League. You know, I mean, I keep a record of NRL appearances, and it's nearly the same players every week for nearly every club. It's quite remarkable, actually. The number of players they're using is just far less than we are. So they're obviously doing some... I mean, they play the game at a high velocity.
Yeah, but they play fewer games.
That's absolutely right. That's certainly one thing. But they also must invest pretty strongly in medical staff as well.
If you finish fifth this year and get to the cup final, how many games are you playing? 29 in the league. You could play three playoff games, maybe four, I think, actually. Four to get to the cup. 36 days, seven
it's
games.
Just too many, isn't it? It's just too many for this sort of sport.
Yeah.
What is the secret with Salford Red Devils? Because we were saying in the previous show and said every time we've mentioned Salford, it's all to do with injuries. If any of the key players get injured, they're done.
There's an article there somewhere. Me and Matt will sort that out for Monday.
I know I said before, cotton wool, but they must be wary of that, and you know they and the other thing is as well about Salford we can mention now, they won at home.
Yeah,
they did. Yes, they needed to. And you know, and that's the thing.
A bit later,
you know, Hull keep getting beaten heavily at home, don't they? We've just been saying.
Just to put in mind, people can say what they want about Salford. For them to be 2 points off third is just ridiculous. And anyone who wants to tell me that there's a team that are punching above the weight any more than Salford, I'll have an argument.
Wakefield.
No, I don't think they are.
I think
Wakefield are doing a phenomenal job.
I don't want to use the word vultures, but there are certain birds circling over the AJ Bell at the moment, going, "No, you've got a good squad here." And
I fear for them next season.
So do I.
If I was Salford and a bid came in for Jackson Hastings, for Rob Lewis, for Josh Jones, I would accept it.
Mm. Evels,
because of the size of the squad. Would you, if you are in charge of Salford, would you suggest the Challenge Cup is an option this year?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, they got to the semis 2 years ago, didn't they, when they were running high up in the league. The beauty of the Cup now is that it's heavily weighted in favour of Super League teams. If you finish in the top eight the previous year, you only need to win 3 games to get to Wembley.
And it's interesting, Michael Carter was saying the other day that, you know, under the Super 8 system that we've done away with, nobody prioritised the Challenge Cup.
No, because everyone was desperate to avoid ninth.
Everybody was desperate to be in the eight. Yes.
Whereas now
they're all prepared to give it.
Huddersfield are ninth, but are 4 points clear and are probably all right.
Huge opportunity. Who does Salford play in the Challenge Cup this time around?
They play
Hull KR.
Right.
Hull KR, who realistically their main goal is.
That's a big game.
Is staying up.
But that's a big game. The winner of that is, you know, probably thinking, all of a sudden, wow, we're 2 games
from Wembley. Hull KR, if you asked Hull KR right here, right now, which game is your priority? The Salford in the Challenge Cup or the Super League?
Well, I don't want to second guess any clubs, and I'm sure we'll go on to a few games, but yeah. I would imagine Wakefield will leave a few out this week. Look, I know they'd want to tilt at the Cup, but you can see that there's a very real chance that Wakefield could finish top three, top four this year.
I think Wakefield are prioritising the Cup, though, this year.
I'd be surprised
according to Michael Carter.
I genuinely think there will only be a handful of clubs that, if you got an honest answer out of them, an honest answer, are really prioritising the Challenge Cup.
I'd be surprised
if Salford will be one.
If you're a club like Wakefield, who've not won much in ages, the Challenge Cup is the...
It's massive.
It's the one, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is.
And that goes for Salford as well.
And I think, you know, they're probably looking at Widnes, who, look, they're not struggling, are they, in the Championship? Far from it. But, there's a lot of young kids in there. They're certainly beatable. I'd be surprised if Fafita played. I'd be surprised if a couple of other big names played. I think they'll use it as an opportunity just to rest people up because...
Well, they've got to be careful not to do that too much.
They have, but you know, they're in London next Saturday, Wakefield, and they got stung there on the opening weekend, so I think they'll be going down there. And, you know, if they would have won in London on the opening weekend, they would have viewed these next two games slightly differently and maybe thought, well, we're gonna rest a few up in London and try and win the Cup game. But now I think they're very aware, acutely aware of the fact that with Wigan and Leeds toiling, there's a great chance to finish in the playoffs this year. Yeah, and
I agree.
You know what? You only need to catch one of the better two called on any given night, which Warrington did at St Helens last year, and you're in the grand final.
It's so tight that I genuinely believe that the vast majority of clubs chasing the top five, that is a priority. I think Salford will be in the minority that
Cass
are
probably an
the
exception.
Up ahead of it.
Cass are probably an exception. They need to win a game of rugby to Castleford. Because we always say, it's always been said, Castleford don't lose two in a row very often under Darren Powell. We've lost 3 in a row now. Okay. You know, 4 in a row, going out of the Cup in the last 16 would be a disaster for them. So everyone's going to view it differently, is what you're saying, and I agree with you. But it's going to be a great weekend. This, for me, is one of the best rounds of the year because, you know,
they'll all come into it.
We'll come back to the Challenge Cup in a second, but we've one last result we've not mentioned there, which is Wigan's third straight win.
I admired the way London played in that game. I thought, you know, London really tried hard to put one over Wigan and didn't come too far away from succeeding. You know, they slowed the game down. I thought their tactics were really smart. They weren't that bothered about making a spectacle of the game.
Thing is, Martin, I try hard every day. It don't make me good at what I do.
No. True. For London to only lose by 10 points, I think it was, at Wigan.
Bless you, Martin, for filling that gap of silence. That could have
You were supposed to. You were going to say you were tremendous at your job there, Martin. I didn't get that. I was begging for.
Let's have a quick Championship roundup before we move on to the Challenge Cup proper. And Toronto have now opened up an 8-point gap between top spot and third place Sheffield.
They were very good.
I thought Bradford played well,
but Toronto at the start of that second half were very, very good.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, not many teams will acquit themselves better in Toronto than Bradford, given their logistics and everything. But yeah, Toronto are phenomenal.
But to lose Tremendous, yes. Easy win at Dewsbury.
Saw the highlights of that last night.
On the road.
Did you? Right, yeah. Okay.
Saw the highlights of that on the Our League app. They had it on the Championship show with Andrew Henderson. They play some great rugby. They're the best team to watch outside of Super League.
Yeah, Mike Reynolds was saying that on Backchat.
Toronto v Toulouse at Summer Bash Opener next Saturday will be
fireworks.
Amazing.
And it's a game can't that wait. Everybody ought to go be to. All right. Isn't it? Really?
Should do, including
No.
Okay. No, I'm at Warrington Hall.
Okay. I'd rather watch Toronto to lose.
I'll buy
so
you.
You're not
I'll,
in Barcelona.
We'll watch it together, Matthew. And I'll buy you a coffee.
Don't drink coffee. Sorry.
Tea then.
Wins. Don't drink tea.
Oh my god. Water. Right. Wins 2 for Halifax, Widnes and York. Lee beat Sheffield.
Yeah.
Very good.
Very good. Weren't they like daft like 18 points or 20 points down?
Don't know, but
they were losing quite badly, and they scored a lot of tries late on.
I think. I'm not sure Lee have got the credit they deserve this year. Great. For everything they had to do in the off season. All the, you know, they had to go back part time. They had to put a squad back together. They've got the band back together, haven't they? What, McNally at fullback, Ridyard and Brayley in the halves, and Hyam at hooker.
It's with like Liam, Liam Hood, Johnny Powell on the
wing. It's like a throwback. A good vibe, beautiful. As well.
John Duffy needs a lot of credit
for
that.
I agree. Massively. I agree. And they
and they're fourth.
They're fourth. Yeah.
You know, that's brilliant. Not bad, is it?
Do you want to say that?
I don't think anyone expected that.
No. Mm.
And Featherstone defeated the Rochdale Hornets, and that leads us on to the news about the new head coach at Spotlands. That's Matt Calland.
They'll be entertaining to watch. I remember when we were at Halifax, and it was the most ridiculous brand of rugby ever seen. Every kickoff was a short kickoff. Everyone, I'm not exaggerating. Every kickoff, they just it was genuinely. It was every kickoff was a short kickoff. They just threw the ball around. They won games 40-30. They were outrageous, and they actually won game. They won championship under Matt Callum. So if it's anything like that,
they need something. They need something like that because the crowds, you know, and the slasher prices for this weekend's match against York,
which they had to do.
Rearrange games.
Rochdale just need. I think they just need a fresh start, and they up from top to bottom.
He did a good job at Mayfield, didn't he? As well, so he knows the town. He knows.
Sure.
He
brought a lot of players through that club.
Just before we move on to the Challenge Cup, just to mention the other cup competition this year, the 1895 Cup. Lowish crowds.
Lowish.
I'm being generous. Doncaster 70, West Wales Raiders 6. Doncaster go through. Worcester Town go through after beating Hunslet by 31 points to 28.
With 14 players.
Oliver Wilkes, aged 39, scoring a hat-trick. Yeah. I mean,
and they had 14 players.
Yeah, absolutely.
Newcastle Thunder beat Keighley, which is a good result for Newcastle, given Keighley's form. And Oldham beat Whitehaven in a big way, 48 points to 12. Mm. Is that a good start for the 1895 Cup?
I don't know.
It's a good idea, but it's kind of...
Unfortunately, you can try and be as romantic as you want. None of them have a chance of making the final.
Newcastle Thunder.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't have a chance of making the final, so it's just unnecessary.
I find it difficult to get too excited about the 1895 Cup because they're playing the final after the Cup final.
Yes, that's
it. Should be the curtain, and
crazy.
We all know
why. But
but it doesn't change it for me. If you've got permission from Wembley to have two games in a day, then play the curtain raiser first.
As a curtain raiser?
Yeah, curtain closer. I think it's like the Challenge Cup, isn't it? Again, that if you get to maybe the quarters or the semis, you start to think, oh, hang on, there's a big payday coming here. If we can get to Wembley, you look at a Bradford or a Lee or a Halifax, they might start to think, oh, hang on.
The semi-final crowds will be interested.
Yes, I agree. I'd have it as a double header somewhere like Headingley.
I agree.
That's a good idea.
Let's talk about the Challenge Cup then.
Yes.
A quick go around through the fixtures, and if anything of note pops into your head, please say it out loud. If not, forever hold your peace. Where should we start?
Get past Friday.
Okay, let's do Friday first. Then. Hull against Castleford. Live on Sky Sports.
Yeah. Don't think either were that bothered.
I'm struggling to predict that because it's got Hull in it, and I don't know what Hull are going to do. Who's going to be fit? What they're going to play like?
Well, it's got the two teams with the most injuries as well.
Yeah,
at the minute,
it's going to be interesting.
Also on Friday night, Wakefield Trinity against the Widnes Vikings.
Wakey will leave a couple out, I think. I would back Wakefield, I think.
Here's an interesting one. Dewsbury against Halifax.
Yeah, isn't that an interesting game? Like, we're talking... Yeah, but we're just talking about the lure of money looming large on the horizon.
And look at that weather outside, everyone. In West Yorkshire at the moment. It's tipping it down.
It's like being in
the Tetley Stadium.
It's
going to be as wet as a tea bag.
It's a big game for both clubs, isn't it? You know, chance to see you in the quarterfinal of the Challenge Cup for a part-time club is...
Oh, I mean, just imagine getting, you know, Leeds in the next round, Leeds away, or if Halifax got like Leeds at home, it'd be phenomenal. There's some. It's more about the money, isn't it? You know, you don't, it's very rarely about the money in rugby league. But for Dewsbury and Halifax, this is a payday for the winner on because it's odds on that they're going to get someone decent
on
but,
TV as well.
And it's
yes, to be on yes, TV, yeah. So.
And it's already a payday for Bradford, isn't it? This weekend.
Well, yeah. Well,
with Leeds.
The press conference is this afternoon. It's a joint press conference, isn't it, Oddsall? Bradford Bulls against the Leeds Rhinos. We might as well cover the Oddsall announcement as well. I mean, it's the 8th, 9th, 10th announcement that Oddsall's getting redeveloped.
I don't think it said it was
going to be redeveloped. Around for the first time announced that you've been redeveloped.
To summarise that announcement, a lot was said without saying a lot, really, wasn't it? It was a lot of words with not a lot of substance.
In all fairness, though, you look at clubs like Wigan with their stadium that they've got now, which is a great facility, but not quite theirs. Swinton Lions haven't got Station Road anymore. Salford haven't got the Willows.
Warrington.
Well, apart from Warrington and Saints, their stadiums have worked out quite nice. But
Wakefield still own theirs.
But I
see what you're trying to.
There's
say.
Not. You can't. I know a few people have said, just get rid of it.
It's
just
very
sell
difficult
it,
to recreate the luster and the magic, isn't it?
No, but once it's gone is my point. You've got to be. Yeah. You can't just be flippant enough to go, just sell it for houses and keep the money.
No, you can't do that. And that won't be done, I don't think, as far as I'm aware.
I'd be surprised if Oddsall looks any different in 5 years, but there we go. That's just to me
it's
going
hard,
on
it's
previous.
Hard, it's hard to really take any stadium talk seriously in rugby league, isn't it? I mean, I know Wakefield are now on the right path, but this
well,
has
I
been
hope
after,
they
about,
hope they
yeah,
are, yeah.
after about 20 years. Castle, when has Castleford's new it's ground
broke,
ever like
brought ground, haven't they? Accent, I think. Yeah, but what you're saying is it'd be amazing if any West Yorkshire teams planning stadium redevelopments are playing in them in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, probably 10.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that the more recent announcement was at Workington. It's going to be there for
well,
the
World
Cup.
Well, it's got to be because it's been picked as a World Cup venue,
So
it's
there's pressure on them.
Well, anyway, pressure on the pitch as well for Leeds Rhinos. They're travelling to Oddsall on Saturday live on the BBC.
Yes, BBC One, I think, as well.
Now, Aaron, what's the crowd going to be for this? What we're talking here?
I know Bradford were hoping between 10 and 12... They would be happy with between 10 and 12. My only issue with that is it won't look very full.
So what do you think the crowd will be?
I think it'd be around 10, I think.
I don't think it'll reach that, personally.
Well,
I think
I hope
six
so.
Or seven.
Would that be a shame
I'd
if it doesn't reach five figures?
I'd be very, very disappointed if it was six
What I know that they are trying to do is make sure...
they had League One games with that crowd last season.
They had one.
They had one
six
with 6,000. Was it York?
York, yeah. What I know they're trying to do is make sure the seating stand, which is undercover and is what the BBC will be filming, is as full as possible. So in a perverse kind of way, if it does rain, I'll probably help because people are paying and go and sit down in the stand. I think that's the most important thing. It just needs to look as good as possible because it's a big day for Bradford. It's their first, you know, if you
first
take
Leeds derby for many years.
Well, it's this club's first ever Leeds derby, isn't it? The club were liquidated, you know, since they reformed. This is their first big day in the sun, and you know, I hope it goes well for them, not with any sort of Bradford allegiance, just because strong Bradford, strong rugby league. I think
can't disagree with that.
If you were picking your 12 or 12 or 14 teams to be in Super League long term, you probably want Bradford in there.
Yeah, it's a rugby league city, isn't
I think
it?
They'll get beat. I think Leeds, I would expect that the Ferner news is actually
stirred,
yeah. But I would suspect the Ferner news has probably stirred something internally at Leeds, and there's going to be a bit of a reaction.
I think there's a gap between Super League and the Championship.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, at the end of the day,
it's romantic. It's romantic.
No, you
Martin,
can't
you
do.
Say that, Martin. But
what's the gap between
OKR?
The gap between Leeds and London is just 2 points,
and maybe London people came think London are a Championship.
Halifax beat London.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look.
Nothing's impossible.
Well, we'll see, and good luck to Bradford.
Nothing's impossible, but if you're asking me to part with 50p, it won't be on Bradford.
And I would never, ever, ever dare completely write off John Kieran.
Salford against OKR, also playing on Saturday.
Salford.
You would think Salford, wouldn't you? And
where's it at? Salford.
Yeah. From what we've said already, you know, Salford are a potential Challenge Cup, you know, target this year, you would think.
Here's one for you.
Yeah.
Doncaster's trip to Catalan.
Brilliant for Doncaster. Brilliant for a League One team to get this far.
Was it Whitehaven who went to Catalan last year? Was it last year or the year before?
Glad they get the trip to Perpignan.
Yeah, glad the reigning holders. First defence of the cup for Catalan, so hopefully a big crowd, which hopefully means a bit of money in Doncaster's coffers. Really pleased for Carl Hall. Obviously.
They're not going to win.
Catalans are going to win the game, aren't they? But
actually, it'd be interesting to see the crowd there, wouldn't it? Because it's only a week out from them playing in Barcelona.
And
they're saying they've sold 20-odd thousand tickets.
And with that in mind, how seriously, you know, with no disrespect to Doncaster, Catalans have got a big event next weekend. Will they rest Tompkins, Smith, Gigo, everyone? Yeah. You know, probably. Mm. So, be it like Martin says, it'd be interesting to see how many turn out because it's their first defence of the cup. So, yeah.
Two big games on Sunday. Yeah. Firstly, Huddersfield against St Helens at the John Smith Stadium, live on Sky Sports.
Saints, and it's impossible to see past St Helens, I think.
What team's going to be put out?
Saints will play a strong team.
Yeah?
Saints, I think Saints will play a strong team.
And finally, live on the BBC on Sunday afternoon, Warrington against Wigan. Why was Wolfie going round Wigan Town Centre?
Just to
please Wolfie.
Yeah, just.
I did laugh out loud. I did laugh out loud at the banister rail sliding down the town hall. That was very particularly funny.
They Warrington looked like they've got back on track a little bit now. They had a little bit of a blip, didn't they, in and around Easter? But that was a good win at Cass last week. It's very hard to see past a Warrington winning a fairly decent one at that. I
wouldn't rule Wigan out.
No, Wigan are fairly good at beating Warrington, aren't they?
I know we can say what we want about the London game.
They're attacking. I don't think they'll score. All right, I don't think the attack the way it is at the minute can score enough points to trouble Warrington.
That's the Challenge Cup. We will have. We've already promised this to Martin that we will have a big brainstorming programme for the Challenge Cup, what needs to happen with the Challenge Cup and that kind of thing later on down the line of the season. But the second round of the Women's Challenge Cup took place, the draw for it took place this week with Dave Parkinson wearing a tie. I didn't like that at all. And I've told him as such, he'll be fine. Castleford taking on Featherstone was probably the standout fixture for the second round of the Challenge Cup, with the Tigers currently unbeaten this season. Yeah. Tough test this weekend, though, in the Super League, where Castleford will host the only other team with a 100% record, and that's Shock Horror, also in the women's game as well, St Helens.
Yeah.
And on Tuesday, I caught up with Castleford Tigers head coach to find out more about the club. Here's Lindsay Anfield.
It's been really positive. I mean, we have worked really hard in the off-season, so I expected them to be bigger and better this year. But to beat Leeds the way that we did last week with quite a lot of resilience and just a good performance, really. So I was pretty pleased, yeah.
Last season was a good season, finishing runners-up in the Challenge Cup, and obviously it was an expanded season as well with more sides joining. So where are you tracking versus your own expectations after last season?
Well, it's difficult because you don't know what any other club's doing. So we've worked really hard, like I say, in pre-season, and I knew how I wanted us to be playing and how I wanted us to be defending. So we are doing, you know, we're on track as to where I wanted us to be. The fact that, you know, we beat Leeds pretty comfortably last week was a bonus. And then we've got Saints this week. So in terms of tracking our progress, I suppose we'll have to see how we do this week. And then we've played the top three teams, and that'll give us a bit more of an indication, I guess.
And as a team as well, I mean, it's been going now for a few seasons, and every year you're making a progression, but the women's side of the game's making a progression. Obviously, going into this season, the exposure the women's side of the game's getting has increased tenfold. I think it's really gone up a notch or two. How do you see the development of the game in recent seasons?
Yeah, the past 3 years, it's gone through the roof, both on the field and off the field, with the profile that the women's game's getting. And that was my big thing coming into coaching, that I didn't just want to push Cass and, you know, have a good team beneath me, but I wanted to challenge where women's rugby sits and raise the profile through all sorts of means, you know, like taking the girls to Catalan and, you know, try to grow the game over there, the social media stuff we're doing. It's really important for me to grow the women's game because it is a good product and it just needs to be out there a bit more.
And when it comes to, obviously, you're in charge of the first team side of things, but beneath you, like you said, the social media for the women's game at Castleford is superb, but also the community side as well. Lots of link-ups going on with other community clubs and high schools and primary schools and all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's difficult because obviously we're all voluntary. It's still the amateur sort of side of the game, but I've got a lot of really passionate volunteers and the girls are happy to get stuck in with the community side of it, which is great. But I think it's now we've got the brand of Castleford Tigers, it's good because people pay attention to you. So, yep, social media's going really well. I've got a really great guy, Seb, who runs that. And, you know, every day he's wanting to push something new out, which is fantastic. all the local schools, we try and go into as much as we can, and, you know, getting the girls DBS checked and safe, you know, going on safeguarding training, those kind of things that people don't see. That's the kind of thing that's going to grow our brand as a women's team. And yeah, we'll just try to do as much as we can, really.
There's community events coming up as well, like female summer touch rugby, which I saw. That's under 13s. There's obviously link ups as well with under 12s, under 11s. We're starting to see those pathways being developed. I mean, they've always been there, but with a rebranded Super League and that kind of thing, it's onwards and upwards, it feels like.
It is, and I think, you know, there's so much stuff out there for the boys' game. And for the men, it's just we're only a matter of time before the girls start getting involved. And for Cass, that's 50% of their, you know, of their supporters are female. So the more we can do for them, the better. The Tigers have actually really come on board with us, and they've just appointed one of our players, Georgie Everington, to be a girls development officer, which I hope will be announced in the next couple of weeks. So she's going to be working closely with schools and the community clubs. So yeah, it's looking positive. We've got a good relationship with Cut Psych, which is our local amateur side, and during the week I'll liaise with them and sort of work out maybe two or three players that won't be playing for the first team that can maybe go on dual region and have a game for them in League One. So yeah, it's starting to come together now. There's a clear pathway, and I think it's looking good.
Absolutely, and we'll come to the Super League in a second. But just to mention, for the Challenge Cup, obviously runners up last year, the draw took place this week, and it's thrown up a plum tie, really, hasn't it? I'm right in saying tie of the round, really. I'm lucky down. Maybe the City Knights against these Rhinos is up there, but it's, you know, Castleford Tigers against Featherstone Rovers. That's a big game, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a derby. I'll be honest, it's not particularly one that I look forward to. That was my old club where I played, and you know, a few of our players went there last season and the season before. So yeah, it's not a particularly nice event for us. But I've just got to keep the girls focused on the job and playing well, regardless of who the opposition are. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. But I just hope we get through it unscathed, put it that way.
Now let's talk about this big game then this week. Castleford Tigers against St Helens at the Menderhose Jungle. It's only £3 entry, by the way. Kickoff is 1 o'clock. If you can't make it in person, though, it is going to be streamed on the Our League app as well. Big, big game, but big, big exposure as well. And how excited is everyone?
Yeah, this is the game of the season for the girls. They were worried about Leeds. You know, we've got that monkey off our back now in beating them for the first time. So now we're going up against a really experienced side. Both us and Saints have got 8 players in the National Development Programme. So you'd say it's probably equally weighted on paper. Saints, of those girls, have got some real experience. You know, girls that have been to 2 or 3 World Cups, whereas ours are at the younger end, the sort of up-and-coming athletes, you might say. You know, we're not a lot of experience. But I think it's going to be a great challenge for them to have to prepare for a game like this and then be able to deliver on Sunday. So, yeah, it's going to be a great test of where we are. I'm looking forward to it.
And just before you go, I mean, what's your take on where next for your side and for the women's game more generally?
Well, for Castleford, obviously, I'm one that I like to keep doing new things and sort of breaking boundaries. So, for me, I'd like to see a world, you know, depending on who the winners are, I'd like to see a World Cup challenge going on. And you know, if we're not up there, I'd like to see us competing with an NRL side just to benchmark ourselves against them, you know, whether it be over there or here, try to get some sponsors on board. And that'd probably be my thing for next year. But apart from that, it's just growing in the local community, trying to get our attendances as high as possible. So we had a target last week of getting 1,000. We got just over 700. I think the record for a standalone women's game is 1,200. So that's going to be our target this season and going into next season to try and show the Cast fans our product and get them through the gates. For the women's game, I think the RFL are actually doing a really good job of promoting it and giving it some backing. So I don't know, the World Cup's in a couple of years, so if that goes well, then who knows? Hopefully some professional contracts for the girls.
Lindsay Anfield, their head coach of the Castleford Tigers, on Our League as well this weekend, which is good.
It's great. Yeah.
On Twitch as well.
At the Menderhose Jungle team.
Cass got about 700, was it? Their most recent
Leeds
game.
Yeah.
Which is more than like League One games are getting.
It's on Twitch, isn't it, as well, I think. Which is a massive platform.
I had to edit out a previous show me mentioning Twitch because I got the name of the platform wrong. I called it Twitcher, which is not really the right name.
That's a bird watching site.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. We'll have more on the women's game as the season progresses. But that's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. But just a couple of other matters arising. Firstly, in League Express, it's mentioned that the D-Day for the North American clubs is coming.
Yeah. Well, there's a board meeting week commencing May the 20th. I think it's the 20th.
Well, it's got to be decided before then.
I think it's the 21st, sure. But the RFL are saying that's the absolute latest they can make a decision.
Really?
That's what they're saying?
No, I'm just saying, yeah. It's a bit of a no-brainer. It should have been made about a month ago, shouldn't it?
I mean, I just do it.
A conference call, don't I? Just
well, yeah. Sure, of course they could. Yeah.
Couldn't they use Twitcher? Yeah.
in other news, World Cup training bases have been announced. A good spread, pretty much across the North.
Wigan got something, didn't they? At last, after being overlooked for the venues.
No Bradford though.
No West Yorkshire at all, apart from Leeds. Bradford. Halifax,
where would you have had a training base in Bradford?
I'm just saying that maybe
there's nowhere, mate.
Because there's a training complex and a game at Workington.
The Kangaroos could have trained in my back garden if they'd have wanted, but I don't think they'd have enjoyed it. It's quite porky. But apart from that, there's not much else in Bradford.
Mm. I agree.
And speaking of Australia, just a quick mention as well, because it's been suggested that heritage players could be lining up for the Lions.
Yeah, great. I think that's great, mate. I think there needs to be a clear distinction between... What are you looking at? I think it's great. The Lions is an exhibition tour. It's about profiling the brand, making the brand look as big as possible. England have got their own goals. England are trying to win a World Cup in 2021, so we're not talking about picking Jackson Hastings for England or Blake Austin for England. We're talking about
Yeah, if they were playing for Great Britain, surely they'd qualify for England.
Well, they would, but I see Great Britain as a bit of an exhibition tour, don't you think?
Thin end of a wedge.
I think it's a deadly serious tour, personally.
I think
they're going to win all four games.
I'd like to see Austin play for Great Britain this winter, and if someone doesn't like that, then tough. But I think it'd be great to see him play for Great Britain. Against the Kiwis, not the Aussies.
Mm.
The Great.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd like to see him playing against the Aussies. That's one thing for sure.
I have to ask the question. Why is it necessarily a problem that a heritage player could play for the Lions?
Well, why is it? Because it's never a problem in cricket. It's never a problem in rugby union.
No.
Half the England rugby union team's heritage, isn't it?
Half the England cricket team. Yeah,
I suppose.
I don't know why we have such
does it say a lot, though, for the game in Yorkshire and Lancashire that we can't produce?
No, because we can. We can.
Well, we can't because you won't pick them.
I suppose, though, they are busy creating heritage players for Ireland, Scotland and Wales,
There's enough depth that you could turn round to Coote, Hastings and Austin and say we're not picking you and still take a damn good Great Britain team.
Oh yeah,
but the facts are that Austin's better than most of the halfbacks England have got because he's just that damn good. Yeah,
he is at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about that.
Well, as Aaron said, it's not just Rugby League that does this. Tony Cascarino remains my favourite international striker of all time.
Of course, yeah.
That's nearly it for this week's show. Just time for any other business and any bits and bobs. Matthew?
Yeah, wait.
Back chat?
Back chat. Martin's on. I'm on.
Mike
Rylance is on and Andy Mays is on.
Mike Rylance, who's an expert in French rugby league.
Yes.
So really good on
was quite a lot of
show.
Really good.
Quite a lot of talk about that.
Andy said some good things about
Andy Mays, very good guest. Yeah.
Speaks sense, doesn't he?
Oh, good guy. Common sense. Very good guy.
Very forward thinking as well.
Absolutely.
Aaron, just before you go as well, because I imagine you've got to go to Oddsall, have you? Are you going to the press conference?
Yeah, okay.
Just before you nip off. Anything coming up for you?
Feature on the Bulls-Leeds derby in The Guardian this week. Yeah, previewing the game. More looking at Bradford's resurgence, I suspect, rather than Leeds' win. Because I'm a Bradford fan, according to Matt.
What do you mean, according to Matt? You are a Bradford fan.
And Martin, League Express out on Monday.
Yeah, a big preview of the Barcelona game between Catalans and Wigan. We'll devote quite a bit of attention to that. And lots of other... You know, usual things as well, no doubt. Lots to read next Monday.
Well, Martin Sadler from League Express, a big thank you for joining us. Aaron Bauer, always a pleasure, my friend. And Matthew Shaw, thanks for joining us. That's it for this week's show. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.